Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Maria Garcia. In just a few minutes, we'll have more on a new memo from Attorney General Maura Healey. She alleges that the Sackler family, who's behind Purdue Pharma, aggressively pushed the painkiller OxyContin even after family members were told by employees that overdose deaths tripled due to opioids. But first, we turn to Washington, D.C., where House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is asking President Trump to delay his State of the Union speech set for January 29th until the government shutdown is over. We're now in day 26 of that shutdown, with no deal to reopen the government in the works. We reached Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey at the Capitol a few minutes ago to ask about developments there. And I started by asking him if he agrees with Speaker Pelosi that the speech should be put off.
I do agree that the speech should be put off. We are right now in a situation where the president cannot report to the nation that we are strong as a nation. We have a government which is shut down. We have individuals who work for the federal government all across the country who protect the safety, the health of Americans, and they right now are sitting at home. So I think the president should focus not on writing a State of the Union address. He should focus on negotiating the reopening of the federal government.
We're now 26 days into this government shutdown, and we recently spoke with Emily Kelleher. She's an attorney with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and she says she took out loans for college and law school like many people do, and now that she's not being paid, she's really struggling to find money to both pay her loans and her rent and bills. Let's hear from her.
It's extremely frustrating that I see it that I worked very hard and I, you know, borrowed a lot of money from the federal government, which they want back despite, you know, the shutdown every month. And I wanted to do public interest work and I wanted the security of the job. I'm trying to do good work and worked very hard, and we're just, you know, we're not able to work and we're being instructed to do things like take up carpentry or babysit. So it's a little insulting, I would say.
Senator, how can people trust that their government still works for them and that it will work again in the future?
I think Emily hit it right on the head. Emily has been furloughed from working for the federal government, but she cannot furlough her student loan payments. Other families can't furlough their mortgage payments, their car payments. If they're not receiving a check, then they are under enormous stress with the real world problems that just keep coming at them, but without the money to be able to deal with them. So that's President Trump's problem. He doesn't really understand what the real world human impact is on ordinary families, ordinary people like Emily. And that's why we just have to reopen the government and then negotiate on security at our border. We just can't do it the other way.
But Senator, I have to ask, you know, the federal government expects to spend $4 trillion this fiscal year. Compared to that, $5 billion is a tiny fraction. I mean, it's not even 1%. So a question for Democrats is, you know, why not give the president that money to alleviate people like Emily in this difficult situation right now, and maybe even bargain for a new deal on, say, immigration to reopen the government?
Well, because if we give in to President Trump's temper tantrum right now, he'll just do it again when we hit the debt ceiling. He'll do it again when we hit the next deadline. And he'll just do this over and over and over again. So the Republican paradox is they don't believe in the government, but they have to run for office in order to make sure it doesn't work. That's what Donald Trump is doing right now. Over and over again, we've had Republicans you know, vote to reopen the government. Those proposals are just turning the Republicans inside out, because now their position is that they won't support anything that Donald Trump won't sign, even though many of them support legislation that would reopen the government. And if we allow this precedent to be set, then Donald Trump is just going to turn our federal employees into one big pawn in a game which he wants to play, which is something that ultimately demeans the service of all of these people across Massachusetts and the country.
Hmm. Senator, I want to touch on another issue that really hits close to home here. People in the Merrimack Valley are receiving backdated bills. These are their first bills since the explosions and fires in September that impacted hundreds of homes and killed one person. You wrote a letter to Columbia Gas and its parent company yesterday flagging two issues that affected residents are getting a winter rate increase, and that people not directly impacted but had their gas shut off after the disaster are receiving large bills this January with January due dates. Do you see any signal from Columbia that they'll consider easing either of these billing requirements?
No, thank you. That's a great question. You know, I put together this letter with Senator Warren and Congressman Seth Moulton and Laurie Trahan. And the goal is just to ask Columbia Gas why customers impacted by the Merrimack Valley natural gas explosions and fires were receiving these large backdated bills with due dates in January after the company assured that they would not do so. And so while Columbia Gas is now apologizing for its lack of communication with residents about the backdated bills, it still has no commitment to suspend that planned rate increase of 1.5% that they are intending on imposing on the residents of Merrimack Valley. That is just completely unacceptable. And we are going to make sure that we keep a spotlight on them until they rescind that absurd additional penalty on these people who have suffered from the incompetence of Columbia Gas.
You know, Columbia did send us a response highlighting that the winter rate increase happens every year, as you said, it's planned, and that it was already approved by the state. And they are a utility. They do need to provide gas. Is it so out of line to go forward with what they call a normal rate increase to cover the increased cost of service?
They may think that it's a normal rate increase, but it's within an abnormal circumstance. These people have been victimized by the incompetence, by the negligence of Columbia Gas, and it's absurd that this company then thinks that it can, during this winter period, put an extra assessment upon these people. The families in Merrimack Valley are already stretching their budgets to cover holiday expenses, higher bills, unexpected costs that can be hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars to the family. And here we have yet an additional unwelcome surprise that goes into the lives of all these people. Columbia Gas should just be big about this. Put on their big boy pants and just say they are not going to impose this additional burden on these poor families that have already suffered too much.
And Senator, moving on here, you and other members of the Environment and Public Works Committee have been hearing testimony from Andrew Wheeler today, President Trump's nominee to head the EPA and a former coal lobbyist. And he said today that he would, quote, not call global climate change the greatest crisis. He does say it's, quote, a huge issue that has to be addressed globally. Senator, your reaction to that?
Well, again, Andrew Wheeler was a lobbyist for the coal industry, and Donald Trump has absurdly named a coal lobbyist as the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency. We might as well rename it every polluter's ally. That's how absurd it is. And so to the extent to which the man in charge of dealing with climate change doesn't really see it as a climate crisis is in and of itself a statement that disqualifies him for the job of being the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And that's what I said to him in the confirmation hearing today.
Let's talk about the confirmation hearings for President Trump's pick for Attorney General William Barr. One of the Attorney General's responsibilities would be, of course, to oversee the special counsel's probe into whether the Russian government interfered with the presidential election and whether the president tried to aid that effort. Barr wrote this long, unsolicited memo to the president's legal team over the summer, arguing that an obstruction of justice case against the president would be weak. Could he be impartial then, overseeing Mueller's investigation? How would you vote if his confirmation is advanced?
I don't think that William Barr can be impartial. I am going to vote no on his confirmation. We need someone who is going to be absolutely, from an appearances perspective, completely impartial in evaluating the Mueller report, evaluating all of the charges that could potentially come against the president. Right now, we have a nominee who has already indicated a pre-existing bias against this investigation and, as a result, should not be allowed to serve in America's highest law enforcement office.
Senator, I want to ask you about something that a lot of Massachusetts residents are thinking about today, a dramatic development in the opioid epidemic story here in Massachusetts. Attorney General Maura Healey filed a memorandum in court alleging that the Sackler family, who's behind Purdue Pharma, flooded the state with sales reps and that they influenced state legislation and financially backed medical facilities and universities so that they could tout the opioid produced by Purdue. Are you following this story? What's your reaction?
Well, the original sin of this opioid epidemic is the approval by the FDA in 1996 of the Sackler family petition to the FDA that OxyContin was, in fact, not a dangerous medicine for Americans to be taken. Purdue Pharma turned our nation into the United States of OxyContin. That's the reality of it, and that company and that family must be made accountable for what they did to hundreds of thousands or millions of other families in our country.
That's Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey. Senator Markey, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you. You're welcome.